There you go.
Greetings. We apologize for any difficulties with our time and hope it hasn't inconvenienced anyone. But we're on track now. And paradoxically, even though we're in the sign of Pisces still, this Aryan influence is building. And as I shared with some of our participants a little earlier, these astrological signs are easy to understand if you divide them into 12 neat, precise categories. But as one cycle ends and another cycle astrologically begins, there's a blending, there's an overlapping where it's not entirely like right now, Piscean energy and Aries is coming in. It's coming in. You can feel its potency building. And the importance of Aries lies in many, many factors, way too many to go into at this time. But for this presentation, it primarily brings in the Aries first ray and the seventh ray. And you'll see the fourth ray there because it does have an important connection to Mercury, but it's usually depicted as ray one and seven. So this is very important that disciples like yourself are able to meet and to participate in these group activities because your energy has never been needed more dynamically, more powerfully than right now, historically. We are in a world that is at war and crises on so many different levels that the quota of energy that we can develop personally and within the groups is very, very important. So, with that brief introduction, we'll go to just a little quick outline, and I may not be able to go through this sequentially. We've already covered a little bit of this. But you can get at least an outline of being prepared for the upcoming impact of Aries. And we know that we all survived 2025 when Shambhala impacted the planet, but it takes some time for even powerful forces like the will of the Father or God to really get traction, to filter down through all the different levels. And it may take lifetimes for that to fully manifest, but it's manifesting powerful enough that we can use it and direct it for group work and right human relations and goodwill and triangles. So we're going to talk about Aries and the will, the vortex, the funnel, the trumpet. They're all synonymous terms as we move into some statements by the Tibetan and our own personal experience. And a little bit from Blavatsky on where we're at in the big picture. There are seven occult secrets. Blavatsky revealed three of them, and now we are moving into a cycle where sound or Fohat that comes down from the abstract levels of Fohatic electricity is now being made available to those advanced groups that have done the preliminary work of personality integration and made some progress with soul infusion. Doesn't mean you have to be a third degree initiate, but it does mean that the force in the direction of your life is not just to understand technically the occult path, third ray. And I know this is going to sound perhaps a little out of place, but it's not just to love more perfectly. That is a given. And that has been shared by the hierarchy for many cycles. And now we're moving into the cycle of the first ray or Shambhala. And this is what we're going to dig into. Okay, I read this every time I do a presentation because it's so important. And I'm just going to briefly go over it. DK is talking to his disciples via AAB back in the 40s, maybe the early 50s, and he's saying, look, all you have to do is get these books out there, do your triangle work, do your goodwill, and write human relations. That's my main expectation. Then he says, until, he's talking about sending out the books, until they are finally superseded next century by a newer and more adequate teaching. Well, I would like to impress everybody that I know what all the advanced teachings are that are going to impact us now and in the future, but it would be far more accurate to say I have just, like an occult mole, dug right into the Tibetans' books for some 50 years and extracted some of the key quotes and insights the Tibetan is trying to share with us that are not all that obvious, that are often buried under layer and layer of minutiae. So hopefully I can reveal a few of his thoughts on this subject of Shambhala and the will of the Father. Okay, the newer truths outlined in Rays and Initiations, DK has this to say. What are some of these newer truths for which I am responsible as transmitting agent to the world of occult students? Let me briefly state them in the order of their relative importance. Number one, the teachings on Shambhala. Little has ever been given out on this subject, and only the name was known. This teaching includes information as to the nature of the will, indications as to the underlying purposes of Sanat Kumara, our planetary logos, directions as to the building of the Antahkarana, which is the first step towards achieving monadic consciousness, and thus the first step towards the way of the higher evolution. Keeping in mind, in the Bailey material, you have two levels of building the Antahkarana. The first one, and I'm just going to simplify this for time's sake, because most of you are already aware of this. The first stage is to build a bridge up to the soul, and then the way of the higher evolution is to build a bridge between the soul on its own plane that has previously infused itself into the personality up onto triadic levels. Teachings on the new discipleship, teachings on the seven rays, and here we go, the teachings on the new astrology, which we very, very superficially addressed to some of the individuals who came into the group a little early because we didn't quite get all of our times organized and set correctly. Information about the new group of world servers and their work. This information includes the attempt to form an exoteric branch of the inner ashrams, teachings upon the new world religion. And I would say, with number six, and I have said this before, and this may be just my opinion, that these types of meetings and group activities, because there's quite a few of them that are emerging, percolating up through the more personality integrated teachings that direct the student towards the higher initiations, which are really the third initiation and beyond. So the opportunity to work in that way and on that level is impressive. And even if it's just tentative, and we all bring our important thoughts, heart energy, inspiration, aspiration to do this work. Not obviously just here, but in our lives and all the other groups we work with. And then, of course, number seven, teachings upon the New World Religion. Teachings on Shambhala. Towards the end of the century and during the first few decades of the 21st century, teachings about Shambhala will be given forth. The effort of the abstract mind of man will be towards the comprehension of this, just as the goal of the hierarchical contact marks the present effort of the disciple. Again, remembering this was written, well, it was published in 1955, but it was probably written in the late 40s or early 50s. The stage? Okay. Glamour is disappearing. Illusions are being dissipated. The stage of penetration into a new dimension, into a new phase of effort and of attainment is rapidly being promulgated. Okay, what were the three fundamental secrets that H.P. Blavatsky revealed in The Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, I believe? A, there is an omnipresent, eternal, boundless, and immutable present that is beyond duality, attributes, or manifestation. The eternity of the universe in toto is a boundless plane, where the cosmos undergoes endless cycles of activity and rest. And last, the third one, the fundamental identity of all souls within the universal oversoul. Now, if you go on to the internet and go to any New Age forum or where there's many groups and individuals posting, you will find that this is the main theme. And it's an important foundation because it relates to the unity of humanity. It relates to the eternity of the universe, time and space in which we live in. And even though there are many, many advanced insights and shares by H.P. Blavatsky that can be added to this, this was her major contribution, and it is becoming, in many respects, a mainstream thought form. So when Alice Bailey comes after H.P. Blavatsky and she states that her work is simply an extension of Blavatsky, it's important to take notice. Because we need to have continuity, and we have two entirely different initiates. HPB was a lion of God, and even though you could say the same thing about AAB, she had more of the second ray. She had some first ray there too, but she was more second ray, and the presentations are somewhat different, but the material is the same. One builds on the other. So when we ask ourselves, what is going to be the next phase or the next stage of the Ageless Wisdom teachings, the first thing we are going to ask is, does it follow the works of H.P. Blavatsky and DK, or is it something just totally created out of the blue? And that's not to say that a new interpretation of the ageless wisdom might not be very scientific, might include modern discoveries in quantum mechanics and plasma research. So it's a test. It's a test for all of us to know what has been around and been repeated. And yes, it is important to know more. It is important to love more. Who could possibly argue with that? But that, to a large degree, has built into the discipleship and their lives to this point. So, again, we're expanding on three levels, but we have to be open to the possibility of this new fourth fundamental. And DK outlines it, not its in its entirety, but one of its key postulates. And what does he say? The subject that we are to deal with today is of such profundity and of such vital moment that your shrinking from even considering it is exceedingly natural. Fundamental postulates, and this is abridged, by the way. These postulates themselves are based on certain fundamental facts, and these facts, seven in number, are not as yet all comprehended. Four yet remain hid, though the fourth is emerging somewhat through the study of psychology and the mental sciences. This round will see the apprehension of the fourth fundamental. These postulates are as follow: that all that exists is based on sound or the word, that differentiation is the result of sound, that on each plane the word has a different effect, that according to the note of the word or the vibration of the sound will the work of building in or casting out be accomplished. That the one threefold world has seven keys, and these seven keys have their own subtones. Okay, this you could write books on what DK has just outlined here. So, but let's just expand on this just slightly. All that exists is based on sound or the word. And we know that in the beginning, whether it's our planetary logos, our solar system, the entire universe, it was breathed into existence by the enunciation of a word, a or sound, a all-pervading sound that as it descended down, it created a passage way for all these highest attributes to come down, but they would lose their potency each level until they impacted the physical or the material plane. And our work, and this is why so much emphasis for the last 5 years has been on the notes or the sounds of the seven rays and how they may relate to your sixfold ray chart, physical, etheric, astral, mental, soul ray, and then upper triadic ray. Excuse me, I may have left out the personality ray. And when you do your alignment, and you may not follow the teachings of the arcane school, or even the teachings that DK gives in his different books. You may have your own type of meditation. Somewhere in that meditation, you should take the color of your personality ray and build a bridge between that with its unique coloring and your soul on its own plane with its unique coloring. Because that is the bridge out of incarnation into perfect unconditional love and spiritual will. And also, when looking from above down, the perfect instruments that you have that can do use these threefold energies in service. Your ability to serve groups and other people is directly determined by your ability to create that bridge between the personality, the threefold lower vehicles, and then the personality, soul ray, one monadic ray. That differentiation is the result of sound, that you have one all-pervading sound. That all-pervading sound, it separates into a trinity, which is best expressed by the AUM, A the Father, U the Mother, excuse me, U, A the Father, U the consciousness or love aspect, the Christ principle, and M the undertone of the Great Mother. And they in turn differentiate themselves into four lesser notes. So there you have the one, the three, the seven. And they diversify even more, but just for this presentation, that's all we need to share. That on each plane, the word has a different effect. Okay. I can, everyone can see that for its face value, that as these notes or sounds from these higher levels come down either astrologically or through our ray makeup, they have a different effect. Is your astral body on the second ray, or is it your soul is on the second ray, influenced by the second ray? Therefore, it's a mosaic, or is it a six ray astral body, which would be you'd use the color light blue or rose color. And of course, for the second ray, you have light blue on another higher turn of the spiral and the great indigo blue that DK shares. That according to the note of the word or the vibration of the sound, will the work of building in or casting out be accomplished? And we'll have a chance to actually practice this in the closing, or should I say, one of the upcoming meditations. Because the second race disciple draws into themselves the rays they think they need to build in, what they may be lacking for growth, for the initiatory experience to take place. However, it is just important as you move along in your incarnation to realize that there are certain colors, sounds, notes that can have the opposite effect of not building in so much as driving out. Because certain very high vibrational frequencies, especially along the first ray line, they can dissipate undesirable energies within your auric field, or that have been built up over many incarnations karmically. That the one threefold word has seven keys, yes, and their own subtones. And we have exhaustively, in the 5 years, 6, 7 years that we have been working with this group, built a foundation for practical application of what DK is stating here. Okay, I'm going to open it up for any comments, any shares at this point, and I
Heidi,
appreciate.
sorry, Heidi's got her hand up.
Okay, Heidi, you're on.
Thank you. I just want to reflect on what is here as a meditation that came in this morning as I was working on the way in the perception as something that was, you could call it a shadow over the sun. I might say it like that if I'm going to put words to it, because this happens on such a deep level that it's the mind is the mind, and I'll just say this, the higher mind is reflecting itself into the lower mind. And it's actually, as it reflects itself into the lower mind, it not only does it shift and change what has been misunderstood, but it actually creates more space. So the way that I was experiencing it was, I was aware that the word creates a form, and that form is not always corresponding, I could say it like that, corresponding to the different layers within the in the internal understanding of what was being brought forward. And it actually it reflects itself in all of those layers. But what it showed me was it wasn't so much the word, it was the energies that were behind the word that were not compatible with what was spoken, because there was a lack of truth. And it was in a particular group I was in, and there was a lack of truth that was there. And that lack of truth reverberates in the deeper or higher layers, however you want to look at it. But as it does that, it creates a vibration of, like I was saying, the wave or the light coming in hits against that particle because of the way that what is being seen from that higher level down into the lower level is being recognized as untrue at that higher level. It doesn't negate the other person or the patterns that are there, but it actually does. That light or consciousness penetrates through the forms that have been layered that are no longer in right relationship with an experience that's happening in the moment of the, I'll use the word reflection, but the meditative mind. Being able to penetrate into an experience that is no longer known to be true. And I'm trying to, I'm aware that what is being said here in this reading really was really present in my meditation this morning as an instruction that was coming in, and then how it was showing itself. It's just so clear. I just really wanted to show the clarity, and it also let me know that it was no longer important for me to be in that group that I was in, because if there isn't an opening or space for the consciousness to come in, it's the timing is off. I can use it that way. The timing is off for that particular substrate, and it doesn't mean that maybe later the energy or the light will penetrate through it, but in that moment there was a incapacity for the vehicle of the group to be able to allow the light through. Anyway, I don't know if that is making sense to you, but I'm sharing it.
Well, thank you. I think it makes perfect sense. And the words we choose may be slightly different, but they can have the same or similar meaning when we share between us this idea of right relationships, timing. What you have shared has no judgment. It's just in your own unique language, stating this is how it is, or how I have found this individual or this group, and that no, I thought what you had to share was very beautifully done.
And it
So
wasn't,
thank you.
and it wasn't this group or any group attained to this. But what I could say is this, that it was a part of the the lower self that is evolving that was needing to be in that group for a period of time, and then that timing ended. And that's a type of discernment when we recognize that certain timings are no longer appropriate for the incoming consciousness that is able to descend, and that it shows us, like, that guidance is there, and it shows us where we need to be for that balancing that you were talking about in the first depiction of the occult or esoteric astrology. You know, how it's actually, if we're really listening and able to differentiate, it will actually take us exactly where it will take us, where we will be of service, without a doubt.
Excellent. Excellent share, Heidi. Thank you. It is about timing, cycles, and knowing when to make access into a given group and when it may be time to depart. Excellent. Okay, are there any other shares that
Yes, Greg
anyone?
has his hand up.
Okay, Greg, you're on. We can't hear
Okay,
you.
you can hear me now, right?
I can.
Okay. So, I was trying to contemplate the relationship between my soul ray, which I think is probably fifth ray, even though I carry much of the second ray, soul ray. But the fifth ray is always a sub ray of just about, I mean, it's a sub ray of the second ray, but it's also at some level, it's a sub ray of the first and the third rays as well. And then when I think about my personality ray, which I really strongly believe is probably the fourth ray. So when in terms of what you were saying about this concept of sound, I think that I'm trying to relate back to Rule 7 for disciples and initiates, in which we enter into the ashram of the great. Of the soul and of our end of the hierarchy in our meditation, and that the process there is that we are inside of that, and that we one of the statements in there that Master DK talks about is the concept of the dual cord. And so when I think about this concept of the dual cord, would you say that what's happening in terms of relating the fourth ray to the fifth ray and considering those two different notes of my beingness as I strive to integrate the personality ray with the soul ray and later on into the monadic ray, would you say that because there are two tones that actually I'm trying to reverberate or emulate in my being? Is that really a statement about us working within the inner planes, wherever that might be, either in the schools or in the temples that are the high temples that we often go to bed and we don't even realize that we go there, but often we do, and it becomes that it's replied to us in a dream or in a state of a different kind of a revelationary experience. So what I'm then asking then, or maybe I'm just stating that the concept of the fourth and the fifth ray, if that's really my soul and how I perceive my soul and my personality ray, would that be a good analogy for describing? Because as I attempt to emulate the fourth and the fifth ray together, because we're always trying to dual chord or dual tone ourselves in everything we do, both here in the very lowest planes, but also in the inner planes. Would that be kind of a related to this concept of the dual chord as we work through the Rule 7 for disciples and initiates?
I would say without any hesitation, absolutely. And I really appreciate how you have articulated and shared with your potential fifth ray soul and fourth ray personality. And I'll give you an example that will confirm your suspicions or your understanding of what you've just shared. Let's take someone who's doing a meditation like yourself that has the fifth ray soul and the fourth ray personality. Okay. The personality ray with its unique coloring, and if it's fourth ray, it's going to be some shade of yellow. Now, remember, there are other influences that can make this a oversimplification. However, it is accurate in the context in which I'm sharing it. Okay, so you have a fourth ray personality, you have a fifth ray soul. In the fifth ray soul, it could be blue or it could be orange, because orange synthesizes all of the lower monastic levels. And yet DK also says that blue relates to the fifth ray. So you have two colors with a soul, and then you have the yellow with the personality. And when you experiment with what I'm about to share, you fairly quickly realize that, okay, this actually is working, or I got to modify my meditation slightly because I feel a different color coming in. In other words, it's like priming a pump. When you take these dual rays, and this is what you would do. Okay, six stages of building Dhyanakarana: intention, visualization, and then projection. That's the first three stages. Okay, during the visualization stage, you would, and I've used this technique that works very well. You always use the soul ray as the center coloring. In other words, you're looking at a donut. The center of the donut has the soul ray, which would be this flaming orange or this blue. And then around that like a corona, and it may even be larger geographically speaking, but it's not as intense as the soul ray. And you take those dual rays as one composite image, and you drive it with the third aspect of building the Antahkarana, which is projection. And this is where the will comes in. And you've used the mental body to create what you want to do. You've imbued it with occult warmth by inspiration, aspiration with the astral body. But now you have to direct it up and beyond those two levels, even though you're using substance from those two rays. And you drive it up and you build a bridge up onto the upper triad or the one monadic level. And this is what DK calls the ray meditation, which is the, he has a key word, and we're going to come across it as we continue our program here. So I'm going to reserve it. It's like paramount. I think the word might be paramount, that this is the paramount ray meditation that the disciple eventually must adopt. And it doesn't matter if you have a lot of 1, 3, 5, 7 or 2, 4, 6, everybody has to build a bridge. Now, there can be variations of this, but I think you have beautifully outlined a technique or a potential technique that I've been using for quite a few years, working with people that are at that stage where they've been meditating for quite a few years. And it's not that they're unhappy with their meditation or that their meditation isn't working. It's that they want to go optimally. They want to go from regular gas to high test. And when we get into a few of the slides coming up, you're going to see why this idea of projection is so important, because this is where you're utilizing, in the early stages, your individual will to make alignment with the soul, and then you're taking your personality integrated will and the will of your soul using color to drive it up to the next level. That is alchemy. That is white magic. And I don't care if you study BOTA or all the Golden Dawn, they all come down to something similar. And DK has it outlined, but there's pieces of it that are strewn throughout his works. So thank you. That was a very, very important statement, Greg.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad that I was able to kind of verbalize it, but yeah, thanks so much. That was really helpful because that's kind of the way I see that I'm doing it, but it's always a trick because so much of what we're doing is dissipation and we don't want to get caught in this idea that oh, I'm so great and all this kind of stuff or whatever. Because there's an illusion as we pursue and go higher in the building of our Antahkarana that we all always have to find the clear route in between in order
The
to.
fastest and the least expenditure of energy is what the seventh ray is about. And I failed to mention that when I was talking about Aries and rays one and seven, because it's not just this immense expansion that comes with Aries, it's the necessity to ground it in practical experience that we can use and, most importantly, share with others. Isn't Venus ray two in, let's see,
Five.
five,
Two
exactly.
and five, yeah.
So you must have a real affinity and warmth with Venus. I mean, all obviously all of the astrological signs and the different sacred planets, but you would have a special affinity with Venus with that ray 2-5. And you're right, Ray 2 and 5 have an intimate relationship, not just through Venus, but for other reasons. That it's this is why it's called love wisdom. It's not just love, it's the wisdom that comes with loving. And with loving comes the opportunity for more knowledge to share it. In other words, we may not be expanding our personality vehicles just because we want to get high and feel that energy on its lowest level, which is certainly understandable, but it's the ability to serve and to share because you have a grounded system. And the first thing other people look for when you start talking New Age or esoterics is this person believable or are they just a flake? And I apologize for using that word because it sounds negative, but I think everybody's got the general idea. Okay, excellent.
We have one comment and then there's another hand, but hold on a minute, Joe,
Okay.
okay? Susie says, I, for one, question how many disciples might make an error in determining their colors. So then what? She says, glamour of a high order is still possible.
Glamour, dear Susie, is inherently here. Doesn't have to land on you. It's everywhere. We're all caught in it to some degree or another. And I do recall the Tibetan saying, which totally blew my sneakers away, when he said, "You can't really be completely released from illusion until the sixth initiation." And I'm like, whoa, I would have thought at the third initiation you were free from illusion. And DK indicates that you are, but in the context in which he's saying it, you realize later that even a third degree initiate has a lot of work to do to get to the level of a master. And yeah, the colors. This is why. I don't know how long you've been with us, Susie, but if you have a chance to review some of my presentations, I have exhaustively gone over the rays and what Blavatsky and Bailey have said, what are the colors of the rays? And it becomes complicated. I've actually written a commentary on the rays and the planes, what their colors are, and you can find it on my Lightweaver website. And it goes into great detail, mainly stuff pulled together by studying HPB and DK, but also some of my own personal experience. And initiation can only occur when a stream of light is projected between a greater entity and a lesser entity, or the inverse, a lesser entity to a greater entity, with their coloring, with their note. Why is it that the Deva kingdom, and that's another theme that we have dealt with exhaustively over these last few years, why is it the angelic and David kingdoms are so important in the Alice Bailey teachings, and yet she gives so little information? For several reasons. One, people weren't ready for it. And two, it could be dangerous in the hands of people that wanted to misuse it. But HPB, this is 100 years ago. Alice Bailey, it's like, I don't know, 75 years ago. So there are more people within groups like this that are ready to work with the Deva evolution. And the Devas are color, sound, vibration. Some have geometric forms, and they all have heat. They all have warmth. And if you want to speak to the angels who are hovering around you, trying to get you to slow down and to tune into their wavelength, you've got to be quiet, you've got to be still, and you've got to know that when you do your six stages of building the Antakarana, as we shared with Greg, at some point your mind will have to go from active to active passive. There's no easy way to describe this, but those of you who are advanced meditators know exactly what I'm talking about. You set in motion the meditation. Okay, I want to meditate today. Oh, there's my meditation mat. Okay, the low mind is moving. And then you have some type of form, and whether it's a deity or a mantram, and you enunciate it, you drive it up through the ethers. And then you get to a point where you're not negatively polarized, but your lower mind is suspended. The chitta, or the mind stuff, that if you keep thinking about your meditation, the other half can't take place, which is the descent of the very thing that you're invoking. If it sees that you're overly active on the lower mental plane, it will not enter you. It can't. Because you've created a barrier. So you invoke it, you use your lower mind, but then you go into what DK calls something serenity. It's also Master M in the Agni, sublime expectancy. Now, think about that and then don't think about it. Entering into sublime expectancy. And peculiar as this may sound, if you're trying to contact the Buddhic plane, you're using in your invocation the highest aspect of your astral body, which is linked to your soul. It's the lower subplanes of the astral that cause all the grief in the world. So you invoke it, you send it out, and then you listen. And if your invocation is pure, if you've learned how to still the mental faculties on its lower expression, that entity who's more advanced by law must respond and will come down through the thread. Even if that thread is no bigger than a hair on your head, if it's done with right intention, with love, with clarity, and the ability to still the lower mind. This is the third initiation we're talking about here. And I have no doubt there are people in this group that are either experiencing aspects of it or coming up for it. And I apologize if that appears a bit pretentious or out of order. So I apologize, but it's a fact to me, because you wouldn't be attracted to these, because there's 100 groups I could work with, and I could simplify it And that's not to say that isn't just as valuable as what I'm doing here, but the question I always ask is, are people advanced mental loving people, are they ready for the next phase of the ageless wisdom teachings? And again, I make no high claims that I do, but if I am reflecting properly, accurately, occultly, what DK is stating and sharing with us, it is of value. And I get as much, maybe even more than all of you, just by virtue of the fact that I've been impelled to put these presentations together and collect all these sometimes out of context quotes into some type of clarity. Okay, one more question, then we're going to continue. Thank you.
Okay, Joe's got her hand up. And I want to say personally, thank you very much for your clarity in your presentations.
Well, thank you, BL. It's a joy to work with you.
Go ahead, Joe.
I'm piggybacking on my son's statements and reflecting that 200 years ago, I want to stand in this present moment with you. But 200 years ago, an ancestor of mine, he wasn't an ancestor. George Washington, no, oh goodness, Andrew Jackson became the president of the United States. Two generations later, my great-great-grandfather was named George Washington. Excuse me, I'm still doing George Washington, Andrew Jackson. And I got to thinking about it the other day and I thought, what is going on? And then I realized that the theme of this widespread family of mine, reaching back 200 years, reaching forward 200 years, this is a soul family. The theme is to thine own self be true. And when I thought about this in terms of what Greg was talking about, I could say to myself, it's group. The group gets an idea. And one by one, people join the group and they catch on to the idea and move forward into the sub-levels of the original one through seven, each expanding on that idea until, in fact, it becomes a global concept.
Beautiful. That is such a wonderful share because it relates to you personally and it shares an occult truth. To thy own self be true. What is my own self and what is truth? And that's what the discovery is. Excellent. Well, thank you, Joe, for sharing that. That was wonderful.
I just want to say we have one more comment here
Okay, that's
before we
fine.
go on. Diana says colors and sounds are linked. We might get shade of blue wrong, but the corresponding note, G, is more accurate.
Yes, thank you, Diana. You can go into a meditation with what you think is your ray makeup and maybe the color and the note. But the interesting thing is, this is all self-correcting because you may be meditating on blue and then violet appears. Now, is that violet the seventh subplane of ray two, the blue ray, or is there another influence there? So it's all very experimental and very creative. And this is what DK meant when he said that the new teachings for which I'm responsible for, and this may not have been listed earlier, is the new and dynamic use of the visualization capacity, which we all have, the ability to create an image. Okay, if I say an orange pumpkin is going to help you grow exponentially, everybody in this group other than thinking I've lost my marbles, is going to see that pumpkin to some degree. Some people, it's like in the room and they can almost touch it if you've got a lot of second ray. Other people that are more mental, they're going to visualize that. And when you get a whole group of people visualizing on some one thing, one movement of energy from this plane to another plane, or from this ray to another ray, it becomes very powerful. And it falls out of the hands of the individual. And as many of you have suggested and indicated, it's a group progression. And everybody is energized, even if it's not your ray. Every ray has seven subrays. So if you say, "Oh, I don't have any first ray," you do, because if you're a second ray disciple, you have in the second ray, the first subplane is the will ray, and all the way down, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So you cannot avoid contacting all of the seven rays, but usually you favor or you're more familiar with the ones that you came into this incarnation have been developing for many lifetimes. And that's where you have to nudge, in some cases, direct yourself into those areas you're not familiar with. Okay, excellent. So let's move along here. This is such a classic statement, and may have said this several times, but I want to share it, right? Would somebody like to read this out in the group?
I'll read it.
Thank you, BL.
Spirit, sound, soul, light. The second word of importance in this fourth rule is the word light. First, the sound, and then the first effective sound, pouring forth of light, causing the revelation of the thought form. The soul is to be known as light, as the revealer, whilst the spirit aspect will later be recognized as sound. Complete light and illumination is the right of the disciple who attains to the third initiation, whilst the true comprehension of the sound of the triple AUM, the synthesizing factor in manifestation, appears only to the one who stands master of the three worlds. It's from Treatise on White Magic.
Excellent. So we're going to explore the AUM in a little more detail. And you can also separate AUM, even though AUM taken as a composite is a synthesis of all three of these things I'm going to mention. But A is usually associated with the father or the will aspect, the U associated with love, vibration, and consciousness, second ray, and then M with active intelligence or the third ray through manifestation. So let's. Okay. Anyone else like to read another one of these?
I
This is,
can read one.
please, thank you.
The enunciated sound. The vortex design, which makes up the main body of the trumpet form, creates the confining walls through which Fohat or the enunciated sound can travel from higher levels to the lower with the least expenditure of energy and with the least resistance. The main body of this trumpet design can be seen to be the color red, symbolizing the first aspect of deity. From out of its flanged throat, the thread of pure Fohat fire blasts forth. All of the seven rays in their potentiality or embryonic state can be seen in the rainbow ring around its inner throat. The first ray or aspect of deity always contains the other six rays latently or embryonically within its constitution.
Okay, I somehow have misplaced one of my. There we go. Okay. The trumpet, the channel, the vortex, they basically all refer to. I like to use the word chalice. There has to be a holding of energy for energy to travel from one place to another. And I realize I may be overly concretizing this idea of the vortex and the funnel, but as we move along, we'll see it's nevertheless correct that the chalice in alchemy and white magic, no matter what system you study, you have to have a container in which to do magical work. And you can dissipate these electrical and magnetic fluids, rays, planes, centers, or whatever you want to call them, if you don't have confining walls. Now, this sounds very contradictory. We're talking about opening up, expanding, creating bridges to higher level. And here I am talking about contracting it into a chalice. But it is nevertheless accurate and true that every ray or plane has a sheath through which it moves. And the vortex and the sphere are the two most dynamic symbols of that process. And this again is a theme that we have really hammered and revealed and shared through all these years of either with plasma and scientists in the vortex or the different ageless wisdom teachings creating the vortex. So let's take this quote from DK. And again, he's talking about AUM, as you'll see. That center is in reality an opening. And he's talking about the door of initiation, but I've had to abbreviate and truncate this for easy assimilation because it gets very technical. That center is in reality an opening, a door leading somewhere, a way of escape, a place through which the soul, imprisoned in the body, can emerge and pass into higher states of consciousness. It has also been called the funnel or channel for the sound. It has been also named the trumpet through which the escaping AUM can pass. That is a very powerful statement, and it helps you understand the previous statement when I said, out of somewhat out of context and perhaps even prematurely, that what you see here is a vortex that has all the seven rays, or a trumpet, or a funnel, all the seven rays represented by its horizontal shaped appendage or funnel. So it has the potential of expressing any one of the seven rays. But in this case, if you follow it from left to right, you'll see that this stream of seven ray energies opens like a flower, and out of the throat of which emanates just one of those, which is the green of the third ray. And this is what initiates us. And paradoxically, well, we're taught to let go, to fuse. But when you build your Antakarana bridge, and this is really another depiction of the Antakarana bridge, there has to be defined parameters. And your defined parameters are the mind and the emotions. In other words, they are the vessels in which you're creating this discharge, this invocation up, out and through their influence into higher realms. And when the reverse happens and these higher soul, monadic, spiritual energies respond, they come down into the funnel and they make the funnel wider. They make the ray energies brighter and more potent. But keep in mind that this is just an inlet. Excuse me. This is just an outlet for energy to flow. If you were to take this and flip it over, reverse it, so that you would see another funnel or chain channel on the opposite end, and then put a circle around it, you would see why H.P. Blavatsky said the occult sphere is the most perfect description of energies on the inner planes. And all we're seeing is an outlet for energy and the escaping the imprisoned body. Okay, so the escaping AUM. So your soul or your monad, it descends into the material realm, actually creates the vehicles for service and for sacrifice and to speed up the evolution of these lower levels. Okay, let's look at this again. I am going to minimize something over here. Okay. The red elongated shaft seen in this image connects the disciple to the will of the Father that can be seen coming back down in a diagonal direction. In other words, this is your invocation, this is your evocation. There's a figure, there's a man. If you look carefully, you'll see coming out of his head center is the funnel that we just showed in greater detail. And he is invoking correctly through the vortex a stream of lighted substance that goes up, impacts this higher entity symbolized by the larger funnel or vortex. And by law, this higher entity has to respond. So it sends back the same vibration that this man sent up, only tenfold, a hundredfold. Let me read on because this gets even more interesting. Okay, the red elongated shafts connect this disciple to the will of the Father and can be seen in a diagonal descent as a picture of a blast of sound coming out of the throat of the percussion instrument like the trumpet. These physical sound waves have been converted into a visible image through sensitive recording equipment. Okay, I have to go back slightly because I can see I have left out a few steps. If you look at the image this gentleman is sending up and coming out of his vortex, if you look at it really carefully, if you got a cell phone, I apologize, it's going to be hard to connect with this next statement. The one that the higher entity is sending back, that is actually a image taken from the sound of a trumpet, like in an orchestra. And that's what it looks like. But let me continue reading here. These physical sound waves that we're looking at have been converted into a visible image. Any enunciated sound, either on the physical or the mental planes, create waves or vibrational frequencies. These undulate in electrical and magnetic waves, but they do have a certain form. Even though we flippantly say they're formless, they are not formless. They're just so ethereal that unless you're clairvoyant or clairaudient to some degree, you're not going to see this. But that doesn't mean you can't respond to it just because you can't see it. These waves will conform to the shape of the note or the key sound in which they are enunciated. Okay, this gentleman is enunciating a first ray note, which, generically speaking, from what we've just shared, would be ah. And again, seen through sensitive recording equipment, coming out that sound, a sound coming out of a brass instrument looks exactly like, to me, a sword. And the sword has always been a key symbol of the first ray. And why would the yogis and the lifetime meditators say that these symbols, like the first ray is a sword, the second ray is a lotus, the third ray is this, fourth ray is something else? Because on the inner planes, they do have these very transparent, cohesive membranes that look like those, that look like all those historical things that have been shared. Okay, any questions about this image? Because I realized that I should have had it better organized. But in my enthusiasm, I often leave out important things. Are there any questions how an invocation takes place between the microcosm of man and the macrocosm of the soul, the upper spiritual triad, the one monadic life? When you do your meditations, you are projecting a tangible energy of force that will knock on the door and demand recognition from these higher entities. So
So,
if there's any question about the image, please.
yeah, I have a comment, Duane. So as you as this is depicting invocation and evocation, and that the evocation is only going to be the same quality, resonance, and vibration as the invocation. But does it happen on a perhaps higher turn of the spiral or higher octave? So, if you can only invoke, let's say, a certain rate of vibration, a certain quality, a certain subplane of matter, of mental matter, or of love, the response back, is it equal only to that which you are invoking in quality and note? Or can it be on a higher turn of the spiral? And if it's on a higher turn of the spiral, what conditions, why or how it's on that higher turn of the spiral?
That's an excellent question. And I would say both. And this is going to sound contradictory, but in the occult path, there are many contradictions that are reconciled when you look at it more from the higher mind, other than just the technicalities. The response that you get when you do your invocation out and up towards deity, the response, the speed of the response determines is determined by the original invocation. In other words, if your mind is just seething with all kinds of stuff and you know it's not a good meditation, you're not going to get a good response. However, having said that, if you demonstrate enough pure aspiration, enough clarity of mind, and enough spiritual willful intent of the first ray, it will get more of a response than what's sent out. And that, of course, is the ultimate game here. This is the beauty of it, that it's like taking an egg in your hand and saying, I have this beautiful egg and I want to eat it, but if I throw this egg up to the ethers, some cosmic chicken will send down 50 eggs. What are you going to do? You are going to devise a method of meditation that will bring optimal efficiency. It's all electrical and magnetic. And when you study how electricity operates, how plasma operates, you'll understand how the etheric has its principles, its guidelines. And once we learn them, it's like driving a car. You can go outside and you can marvel at a beautiful Ferrari. Oh, the paint job is just, oh, candy colored red. And it's got 10 gears forward. And look at the tires. And or you can do that and then get into the Ferrari, turn the ignition on, and just book it out.
So
So,
a follow-up comment then would be, if that cosmic chicken that's taken your one egg and given you 50 in return, is that kind of the beneficial perks from the soul, or is the solar angel involved? And because there's got to be something that is giving you more back than just what you are sending out as invocation. So is it another life like the soul or the solar angel that through the essence of itself, which is already tenfold, but you're in that connection harmonically and resonantly with 10% of it, that when you get that evocation back just by the nature of itself, you're going to get 50-fold back?
yes, this is a very good question. And I think you've really, to a large degree, answered it. The solar angel, under the impression or the guidance of the one monadic life, takes on this sacrifice to embed some part of itself down in the very, very depths of the material plane. Now, how does it do that? The solar angel collects into itself and it sounds its note. Let's say it's a second ray solar angel borrowed from Venus, taken from the heart of the sun or one of the other esoteric planets, and it enunciates its note. The solar angel listens attentively to what may be lacking within its constitution. Now, I understand this may sound like a wild statement. The soul sounding its note, attempting to find out what it's lacking. The soul's perfect on its own plane. Not so. The soul is perfect in contradistinction to the little man down here in this picture, but it is not perfect. It is extension of the one monadic life. And the monad has a plan for this, but we'll go into that at another time. The soul sounds its note or blazes forth its inherent innate color, and it sees what is lacking. Oh, I got all these gorgeous blues and pinks and yellows, but I don't have any green. I don't have any active intelligence or enough of it to be perfectly balanced. Okay, so what does the solar angel do? Knowing that it's lacking. Now, this is straight out of Cosmic Fire, and I admit and acknowledge that I've stepped it down for easier assimilation because there's a lot of technicalities involved in this that aren't necessary to understand. Okay, so in this case, let us just say this man has all the other rays developed, but he lacks the first ray. So what does he do? He takes the little first ray he has, directs up through this channel, through this vortex, knocks on the door of the soul. The solar angel responds by sending him the type of energy he needs. But to go back to what I was saying just a few sentences ago, the solar angel knows what it lacks on its own higher plane. It sends down these threads and it creates your personality ray, because that personality ray is going to express three lesser rays that are going to help its evolution when the personality has become integrated and the individual unit, the man in this case in black, says, "Hey, I don't belong here. My home is in the heavens." And then he becomes initiated and he goes back to the soul level. However, and this is everything I've said alludes to this one occult statement. He goes back with the knowledge and with the experience of having descended all the way down through all these different levels, perfecting all these lower levels, integrating the personality, and then being drawn back up. And guess what happens? The soul on its own plane now has greater light. So, if we look at it from the point of view that the solar angel sacrifices some aspect of itself to descend down this channel, this Antarkarana bridge, and that it is at the same time taking on the karma, this person who's living in manifestation is not taking on just its karma through its different vehicles, it's taking on the karma of its family, the karma of its spiritual groups. So what happens is it becomes radiated out and it becomes the saving force. So the solar angel is doing several things at the same time. It's developing its own evolutionary growth to a higher level by saving the lesser lives that are trapped down here, by perfecting a personality, let's say like a master or an initiate or even an advanced disciple in incarnation, that can speak, can act, and can demonstrate what it's the joy, the beauty, the love of making this connection back to source. So I don't know if that answers your question, Rose, because I inherently sense that you answered a lot of your own question by how beautifully you framed the question. And I don't know if it was Socrates or some great thinker once said, if you can frame and know the right question to ask, you're already half, if not more, towards the recognition of the answer. Because the universe is there before us. It's throbbing with information, even on a third-ray level, to say nothing of unconditional love and the will of the Father. We're in an ocean of it. We just have to learn how to tap into the ocean. And that's all this is. It's just a long, drawn-out dissertation on the science of the esoteric mystery schools in its simplified form.
Well, if
Any
you can,
comments at this point?
well, one last comment, just that what you're just saying there, that you are the answer yourself. It's there. It's just unveiling, because you already are the answer.
Absolutely. And I've shared this so many times, but it's so perfect. When Gurdjieff, the great occult mystic who came at the turn of the century from one of those seventh-ray countries in the Balkans that have probably changed geographical markings 10 times since he arrived at the turn of the century, he said, "Let us help lift the burden of our common Father in heaven by working as an integrated group and as an individual who's becoming enlightened." What a powerful statement. We are co-creating ourselves. And this is why DK says ultimately at the end of the line, he says, we realize we created our own path, that we are the path. And it's not so much building, that's just the lower mind relationship or understanding of it. It's more a revealing of that which was always there. Thank you, Rose. Any additional
We
comments?
have two hands. Dana, your hand is up first. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Duane, for such an eloquent expression that in itself has created a vortex and a funnel. I'm sorry, I gotta get back down here a little bit to express anything else. And means of expression and creating the funnel or the vortex, I find that the same thing occurs through the use of sound. Like looking at the picture, if that's what comes from a trumpet, I wonder what the expression actually looks like when it comes through the resonance of a gong.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because when it's without words, and because of the sound and the frequency aspect, such tremendous vortexes are created by those sounds that it's an evocation to the soul and or the solar angel and or all the additional devas that are always around for sound, you know, just expanding it tremendously. Which is one of the reasons why when I finish doing a sound bath, I give people time to come back because they're normally so evoked and consumed by the literal vortexes and funnels that are created in the event that it takes them a while to get back. So I definitely experience this visual as a reality. And I want to thank you for that. And thank you for because your expression just now for me did exactly the same thing.
Excellent.
So thank you.
Thank you. And everyone's joy is my joy, and my joy is increased by everyone's participation. We need to release our moorings, moorings that have stabilized our lives, moorings that have worked, moorings that keep us upright. But it has to be done in the right environment and under the right spiritual impressions. And group work is that. It's not for nothing, Dana, and thank you for your eloquent description, that they call it a gong bath. You're not listening, you're not just hearing, you are immersed. And that's what the group life does, and that's what pure music does. It immerses the whole person, and it lifts, it helps lift the moorings that have kept us tethered to the material plane. And everybody's process is slightly different, but it's all based on the seven rays, the 12 astrological signs, and other laws and principles. So thank you. Okay.
And Barbara has her hand up.
Okay, Barbara, you're on.
So this central sphere reminds me of the Sri Yantra of the downward facing triangles and the upward facing triangles. So when they're in really a multiple form, it becomes a sphere. So the Sri Yantra has at its center the place where the primal ray resides, that the primal ray that isn't differentiated, that comes directly from the absolute, that is the primal ray that HPB talks about, offers a kind of pulsation that really animates the sphere even more. So I think that as we are going into the Aquarian age and a time of even greater synthesis, We're going to be in a visual reality that we can have six different rays and at the same time one source ray. At the absolute nexus of it all, and that source ray is going to become more and more active and significant as we go into greater synthesis.
Excellent, Barbara. That is a wonderful share, and I am in total agreement. One of the things that you brought out, well, actually many, we're just about to head to the dual triangles, the upper and lower triads. So you're right on the money. And the idea that all these rays and planes, they're all these astrological signs, they're in motion. The Tibetan has said the greatest thing that any disciple can recognize is that all is energy and that these energies are in motion. So when you mentioned the word, Barbara, pulsates, we have to recognize that the soul on its own plane, the monad, and even lesser aspects of those two high principles, they pulsate, they vibrate, they throb to the great heartbeat of the system, which is the solar logos, sets the tone, and by sounding that note, but that note is not just a note, it has three main aspects that eventually fan out into seven other aspects, seven rays. The one, the Trinity, the three, and then the seven. And then they can even be broken down further into 49 sub ashrams or groups or rays. And that was a nice and wonderful share. So thank you. So let's see if I can get my computer to move, which I don't seem to be able to do. Let's try this. Rose, are you still available?
I'll be right there.
Okay. Yeah, no, my computer has been around a little longer than, oh, here we go. Okay. We're talking about destroying angels, and I am going to skip that part. Because we've already repeated it. Okay, now we're going to do a meditation. And we've been studying the vortex, the funnel, and now we're going to actually see a replica. And when someone who has developed the visualization capacity can see something, it's easier for them to be influenced by it, A, and B, they can close their eyes and they can duplicate it on the high mental plane. In other words, all these animations and symbols that I share, they can be quite potent just looking at them sitting in the comfort of your armchair. But when you close your eyes and duplicate it on the high mental plane, then you really make things happen. And one is more passive, and there's nothing wrong with that, and one is a little more active, but a little more powerful. So I want to use this meditation not just to clear out any debris that you may have in your auric field. Anything that was very useful to you, it can even be fear, something that you needed to experience but is no longer necessary. And when you look at this vortex rotating, imagine it descending, stopping at the top of the head, beginning at the top of the head, and moving slowly down. And as it moves down through you, it throws out any half-formed thought forms, any illusions that you're working with and you want to dissipate, and then down through the astral body, dissipating any fears, any discomforts, any shadows that you no longer need. Sometimes shadows can be nurturing. They can give us time, like the roots of a beautiful rose bush, that the rose can only flower sometimes depending on the depth and the activity of the roots going down into the darkness. Darkness itself can be very nurturing, but once that nurturing has transpired, the flower of life, the egoic lotus with all its beautiful and radiant petals, will burst forth into the higher regions. All parts are needed, all parts are sacred. It's just a question of shifting our attention. So take a deep breath and visualize this cone descending on you and lifting you at the same time that it's throwing out, lifting with its potency and power, any undesirable qualities that the personality no longer needs. Visualize these little specks. We have a rotating vortex here, a cone, out of throat of which comes deity in its different ray expressions. But imagine that we are all one little dusty speck in this grand symphony, this grand mosaic. Now, whether it's your the rays of your personality or your soul ray, monadic ray, It doesn't matter. And cyclically, this is how we are swept in when seeing the larger picture, that the solar logos being of it being instrumental in creating this second ray solar system and being of the fourth order, you're going to get very strong ray two and ray four. So its little monadic specks would dominate the other rays, and they would exist, they would contribute, but they would be of lesser potency. And then this also goes with the seven sacred planets, depending on what round or root race or part of that the soul is on, will depend on where they will find themselves in this grand rotating organic mosaic. Okay, are there any shares that anybody would like to make about the rotating trumpet channel?
Diana says, my experience, the rotation expelled yellow particles. Question: by expelling whatever is hindering resonance and fusion with the soul from the three lower worlds, are we perhaps cooperating with the solar devas to redeem the lunar Petries who inhabit these three sheaths?
Yes, the purpose, thank you, that's a wonderful comment. The purpose of the devas is to assist the reappearance of the Christ, the avatar of synthesis, and the masters to redeem substance and to drive some color out of your system indicates that you have created a vacuum. A temporary vacuum or a partial vacuum. And let's see if I can explain it in this way. When we meditate, we create a vortex. The vortex is part of a sphere. There's an inlet and an exit. Excuse me. When you sound the Om, OM or AUM, AUM correctly on the right note, or at least a similar note, what happens is at the center of the throat of that vortex and in the center of the sphere, remember what you're looking at is like a cap to a to a sphere. Energy coming in the top rotates through the whole system, exits at the bottom, and goes to another sphere. If it's redemptive, it goes to a lower sphere. If it's invocative of a higher level, it's connected to a higher sphere. When you sound the Om and the AUM correctly, it creates a vacuum in the center of the vortex. And nature abhors a vacuum. So what happens is you're throwing out that which is unwanted. But the soul is using that as an opportunity, as well as the higher vehicles, to build in, to substitute what has just vacated. And it all happens under the law of electricity and compression. When you create a vortex, you create an area that is empty. And nature abhors a vacuum, so the other energies rush in to compensate. Now, having said that, another dynamic takes place when you sound the Om correctly. It does just the opposite. The AUM or the Om, it throws the heavier elementals out to the periphery of the vortex. And then eventually they can get discharged down into the earth where all the lower elementals congregate, waiting for their day of opportunity. So it's expansive and contractive. It's redemptive in two different ways. It's in breathing and out breathing. And when you get into the Raja Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, you realize that to achieve this state of perfect poise, sublime serenity, that you have to regulate your breathing in a new way. And this usually falls under the stewardship of a master's guidance, but just because you don't have a physical master doesn't mean that your soul is not instructing you, impressing you, or that you are in an ashram, but the master may be out of physical incarnation. And so all of you will notice that as you approach these advanced stages, that you have to breathe evenly and deeply, and that you have to learn some of these yogic techniques, because the individual breath of each disciple here in this group eventually has to be given up to the group breath, and the group breath to the breathing of the ashramic life and to the breath of the master, which may sound a little strange and a little out of context, and I've oversimplified it, but the individual breath is just as important as color and sound. In fact, at some points, it's even more important. Excellent. Any other shares?
Joe says, I'm wondering about sound as a diamond white light, and also that sound may be experienced kinesthetically.
Yes, that's very interesting. Yes, a diamond is expression of the first and the seventh ray because of its purity, its hardness, and its rarity. But there are geometric forms to all the rays, and they are morphing. When we say they palpitate, it can be flashing between the flower of life and the dodecahedron, or and we've reviewed that quite a bit also, the importance of gems, because they inherently ground certain energies. However, the most important aspect of radiation comes from the mind itself. But these sacred gemstones can activate that in its lower form, and then when you visualize it on the high mental plane, it's like going from a rusty bicycle back to our Ferrari as far as the speed that you're traveling to make these connections. Thank you, Barbara. Okay, let's go forward a little bit here, and we're going to go right to the idea of working through the centers. All the centers are vortices, and there's really only two vortices. There's the mother, if you can see my cursor down here, and the father vortex up here. In pralaya, or prior to manifestation, or pralaya, these two vortices are one, and yet they are nothing, because Fohat hasn't created the seven sons or the seven daughters yet, which is where all these other subsidiary groupings come in. And all you have to realize is that every one of these centers is a vortex, and when you can rotate energy around three points or three lesser vortices, it creates a greater vortex. In other words, you want to go through the first initiation, which I have no doubt everyone here has. It's because, whether consciously or unconsciously, because you don't have to always know the technicalities to make this dynamic work, it just can help speed it up if you want to be more scientific about it. Base of the spine, sacral center, throat. When the energy, humanity has a lot of energy in its sacral center, and that's the dynamic of what's taking place historically now in the world. A bunch of people, mainly men, and I hate to profile here because I could be wrong, they don't have control of their sacral centers and they have misused it. And what we see is the result of it. Okay, sacral, throat, base of the spine. That is really one vortex after the first initiation. Second initiation, base of the spine to the solar plexus, over to the right, up to the heart, then back to the base of the spine. So you've seen this hundreds of times, so it's not necessary to go into it in greater depth, but I just wanted you to include that somewhere, however, on a minor level. Okay, the purpose. It should now be obvious to you that this science of triangles concerns the beneficence of deity, and that through the intricate combinations of cosmic, systemic, and planetary triangles, and I would add to that your personal triangles, like I just shared, the purpose of God. The purposes of God are working out. Those purposes are motivated by love. It is through these relationships that love expresses itself, brings about the needed changes for that expression, and human consciousness is brought into the required state of inclusiveness. All is symbol, and these symbols must be mastered. And DK simply says, I've scattered all these charts and word pictures that you can find in Treatise in Cosmic Fire and other of my books. You must master them. You must use them to open the real center, because they're just veils. And I don't need to read that quote. Here's one example: the all-seeing eye of Shambhala. Well, when we think of Shambhala, we think of pure abstraction. Nothingness, the absence of everything, just pure will, pure power. Not so. That on its own plane, and we're talking about states of consciousness here, there still is some lighted form. And it is so advanced, it is so ethereal, we can't recognize it or bring it into our lower vehicles until we go through these initiations that we have tirelessly shared through these presentations. The all-seeing eye of Shambhala is a world of pure energy, of light and directed force. It can be seen as streams and centers of force, all forming a pattern of consummate beauty. The eye of God, the all-seeing eye of God on a monadic level. And there you have the seven rays at the very top. You have probably coming from the cosmic, astral, or mental plane, some stream of inspiration. It impacts the monadic level, and it sets in motion the seven monadic groups. The first one, impact, is the first ray. Second one is, which is red. Second one is blue. Further down, it's ray three, green. Ray four, yellow. Ray five, orange, red. Ray six, rose. Ray seven, violet. And okay, let's look at another symbol from H.P. Blavatsky, Fohat, which is cosmic electricity or the will of the Father. She says, is a fiery whirlwind. Let's look at this one. I call the dance. It's Fohat or first ray, depicted by the black dot in the center of this red disk, galvanizing second ray Devic substance into rotary and cyclic spiral motion. That Fohat is a vortex, and as it comes down through the different levels, it agitates all the substance around it. And what's the first thing that it agitates or creates? It's almost the same thing. It agitates and yet it creates at the same time. It has a secondary eddy or spin-off that opposites in the opposite direction. And then ray two gives birth to ray three, and it would be a lesser vortex that you can't see, not made here, of green rotating in the opposite direction, all the way down till you go through all the seven rays. Okay. Let's look at this one. This is why mantrams, and there's many of them out there, the AUM and the OM are the most common ones that the Bailey people study, but there's many of them. A mantra, when rightly sounded forth, creates a vacuum in matter resembling a funnel. The funnel formed betwixt the one who sounds it forth and the one who is reached by the sound. Well, we tried to give, perhaps inadequately, some depictions of that with previous slides. One, when this takes place, it links him and aligns him with the higher self or the ego. Two, it puts him in contact with his master. Three, it links him with his egoic group and binds all into one composite whole, vibrating to one note. To go back to what Barbara said earlier, and it occurred to me I did not address that properly, when she said that you have one primal, all-pervading note, which would be like looking at this chart, it would be the red stream in the very center. That's the first ray. But as it comes out, all these other circular eddies or vortices that are created by this downflow of powerful energy at high speed, they are secondary notes. They are foundational, but they're very important. Okay. All is symbol, and the symbols must be mastered. DK says, all that is possible for us to do in this section will be to impart the truth in three ways: through the illumination of the student's mind as he studies the stanzas of Dian, which will be found at the commencement of this treatise in Cosmic Fire. Secondly, through the realization that will come to the student as he correlates and ponders upon the various occult fragments found scattered through the pages, primarily centering his attention upon the following words: the secret of the fire lies hid in the second letter of the sacred word. The mystery of life is concealed within the heart. When the lower point vibrates, when the sacred triangle glows, when the point, the middle center, and the apex connect and circulate, the fire, when the threefold apex likewise burns, then the two triangles, the greater and the lesser, merge into one flame, which burneth up the whole. He's referring there to the Kundalini, that at the third initiation, the Kundalini becomes activated and it assists you in making progress that otherwise would take many lifetimes. But if you haven't done preparatory purification, it can have some negative side effects. Thirdly, through the consideration of the various charts and word pictures, which will be found also scattered through the treaties, the student of the new era will approach much that he has to master through the medium of the eye, learning thereby to appreciate and solve that which is presented to him in the form of lines and diagrams. All is symbol, and these symbols must be mastered. Okay, so now moving along,
we're out of time too.
We're out of time, so I'm just going to show two more slides. One slide in the closing meditation, and we can be done in 5 minutes or less. This is the same diagram that I just showed you applied microcosmically to an individual person. Upper monad, it has a third ray monad, it has three outposts. Those three outposts are what create the soul body, but at the third initiation, the soul fades out, and the monad has direct access to the three lower vehicles, the astral, the lower mind, and the physical etheric. And so what happens is, at the third initiation, these two triangles, because the soul is starting to dissipate, begin to connect together to make the Seal of Solomon or the Morgan David glyph, you know, the tetrahedron, the dual star. And what we're going to do now is we're going to end this meeting with another meditation. And it's simply going to be setting in motion what we've just described in some of the previous slides about the AUM, the upper triad, the lower triad, so you can get a feel of the mobility. So often, DK says, you have to take this image I've given you, this symbol, and set it in motion. So let's see if I can bring that up without any trouble, and we'll go right into a meditation, linking your lower triad to your upper triad. Okay, I've somehow have it in an incorrect position, so I will bring it up directly right here. Okay, this is supposed to activate on its own, but it's not. So Rose is here to save the day. This is a video. Okay, sorry, we'll go to another video. No problem. Thank you, Rose. Same image, only synthesized into one organic whole. The upper triad descending and the lower triad ascending. Excellent. I want to extend my appreciation for all of the technical assistance we have been given and for all of you for taking time from your busy schedule to be a part of this beautiful group mosaic of which you are an intimate part. So lots of love and thank you.
And we hope to see you all next month, Saturday the 11th, for the next Awakening the Higher Mind Through Intuition.
Excellent.
And it will be at the normal time, the 7 p.m., so 1 hour earlier than what we were today. Okay.
Okay.
And Duane, I've emailed you, and Michael, I'll still be post-op and won't be able to sit at my computer. So you guys will be on your own. Well. And Rose, who's always a great help.
Thank you so much, BL, and I appreciate your astrological wisdom.
Hey, like I said, I've been working at that for many years.
It shows.
All right.
Love you.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you. See you soon.